I should have come up with Jim, but didn't understand the process. I'll be very brief in that you have covered several of the points. The only reason I'm speaking, I think if you address some of these concerns early in the process of the review, you're going to be a lot smarter coming out the back end here, because obviously you've heard a half a dozen. We kind of agree with Mrs. Cavori on the vision creep aspect of this extension. The cultural district and our buildings are entirely different than issues faced, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6 blocks from us. So the cookie cutter approach really does not work. So if we can get that correct, for instance, something that hasn't been discussed, the half a block issue across the street, you're drawing the lines straight down the middle of 11th. So, you know, and we have the notification issue of, for instance, we represent 143 homeowners in the Benson Tower, and although you had a presence from the Elliott, we know of many people in the Elliott that don't approve. So these are individual homes that pay. Our building 3 years ago paid you no property taxes. This year we paid you over $500,000 in property taxes. So between those two structures, the at $39,000 for the Elliott and $18,000 for the Benson are the two largest contributors to the potential expansion. So to see, I had not heard the numbers, but to see us paying roughly what Nordstrom's and Macy's does for almost no services, because we do not, our problems are also in the evening. We take care of our own property and we pay a property manager professionally to do that. So the needs are entirely different. So we've got to get that better as you proceed next time around.
Thanks. Message received. Hi, welcome back.
Hi, Mayor Commissioners, good to see you again. For the record, I'm Veronica Reinert, Director of Community Relations with Travel Portland. And Jane gave you a pretty good view from an individual attraction, so I hope I'm not being too redundant in giving more of the macro tourism view, and I have scratched out some things for brevity. As you know, tourism is an important economic driver for our city and especially for our central city. Last year, visitors spent $3.6 billion directly in the Portland region. There's no multipliers on that. Those are new dollars coming into our community, and that spending supported 29,000 jobs. And outlook for the industry is good now, with actual numbers and intent to travel both on the increase. Central City businesses tell us that 20% to 50%, depending on the business, of their business actually comes from visitors. And so having a clean, safe-feeling, friendly, and vibrant Central City is really important to attracting those visitors. In fact, there are studies that actually show that safety and a clean environment are among the top factors that people consider when choosing destinations for travel. Visitors love that Portland is such a walkable city. It's one of the things that sets us apart as a destination. We're always looking for what sets us apart as a destination. But, of course, people need to feel safe on our streets for that to continue to be attractive. Clean and Safe, Inc. has done a great job of keeping downtown enjoyable for our visitors and residents. And I would echo Phil Kalbarer's comments that when you look at their monthly reports, I can't imagine what downtown Portland would be like without their work. You saw all of the statistics earlier, so I won't go back into those details. But suffice it to say that those thousands and thousands of graffiti tags removed, trash removed, drug items removed are hugely important to how visitors experience our city. I'd also like to point to the thousands of pedestrian contacts each month. The work of the ambassadors is really important. They present a friendly and helpful face to our visitors, and they're able to really leverage the work of our visitor information center to help ensure that our visitors have a good experience while they're here. So in conclusion, if we want downtown Portland to remain vibrant, attractive, and profitable, keeping it clean and safe is an imperative first step, and I urge you to renew the downtown clean and safe district. Thank you.
Thank you very much. How many more do we have? The rules of the house are you can do the jazz hands, but no clapping, unless the chair of the council says you can.
I show 9 more signed up.
All right. Are these new thoughts, new points? Then we want to hear from you. If they're repetition, we would beg your indulgence, and you can just say, I agree with one of your compadres. Who are they?
Mary Morris, Jerry Nothman, and Richard Leonetti.
Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jaquita, I believe
you are citizen of the day.
Jaquita Eddy on Northeast 60th.
Thank you for your patience. I'm glad that you're here. Who would like to begin?
I guess I will, if I can. Since I don't have a computer to put up there on the top, would you just stand that up, put that through there for me? My name is Richard Leonetti. I live at 1414 Southwest 3rd Avenue. And I'm here to tell you that the bid formula, not just for condos, for business, the bid formula is badly out of whack. The fees are grossly unfair between the bid payers. A few pay a lot, and the vast majority pay peanuts by comparison. Now, your own measures in the statute say elevator capacity, square footage, and assessed value are supposed to be the measures of the fee. I'll throw out the elevator for a minute. But if you look at the measure of square footage, the fees run from less than 3 cents to more than 30 cents a square foot on the building and property. That's 1,000% variation in that measure. The second one, the assessed value. You're using assessed values fundamentally formed 17 years ago. So I arbitrarily took 15 properties plus my own and said, how are the assessed values or the market values, either one, but the assessed values today compared to the way you calculate the assessed value now? The variation is from about half of the current assessed value to 1.5 times the assessed value. So that is out of whack by 300% kind of variation. With the exception of possibly low-cost housing, there shouldn't be any variation between businesses who are essentially the same kind of position. They should pay the same fees. That's my point. The simplest way to fix the fee would be to take the data you already have and say everybody's going to pay the same per square foot and be done with it. That would be easy because you've got the data. A more complex one would be to try and update the assessed values or some kind of value and adjust the rate to fix it. That's pretty involved. I've got a third one in the written material I gave you that's a little more, it's less complex, but it sounds more complex. The bottom line I heard from the consultant and the alliance was all the same. Well, if we fix this to make it fair, we make a whole bunch of unhappy people. And that's absolutely right. If 20% of the people are paying the bulk of the fees and 80% are paying below average fees, the median on this fee per square foot is 4 cents and change. The average is about 9.4 cents, and the range is from 3 to 30-something.
We're actually directing the staff to go back and look at the formula. We agree with you that there's something.
Okay, well, let me just finish, then I just go one more thing. I mean, the present fee, I'm going to put it in personal terms because I think it fits. If I went here and collected $20 from every one of those people, that'd leave us about $4 million short. Now, there's five of you who are just as much downtown as I am, and I asked you to pay the $4 million, split it up among the five of you. You wouldn't consider that fair. And I think you've heard from some other people who said they're a little unhappy with the fairness of the fee. The present formula is wacky. It needs to be fixed. It could be fixed simply. And all I'm asking you is, do you want to be popular or do you want to be fair? That's the choice you've got to make, and I'd like you to answer that in the answer of being fair.
Well, thank you for your presentation and your visual.
That is on the second page.
Yep, I see that. Thank you very much. What do you do for a living?
I am retired. I'm a researcher for the Tax Foundation of Oregon.
I kind of figured there's something there. You're just very precise. I appreciate that. Thank you very much. Sir.
I'm Jerry Nothman. I live at 1414 Southwest 3rd, in the Fountain Plaza condominiums. And I'd just like to remind the board that we, as a condominium, have contributed on a voluntary basis to this thing every year for 13 years. So it isn't a question of being anti-clean and safe. But clean and safe today has lost its way. It started out as a benevolent social organization that was doing good things for downtown Portland and for the homeless that were around Burnside and so forth. The homeless in the main have been replaced by $100,000 vehicles that do the same job a little bit more efficiently, but it doesn't put any homeless on the streets. We have cops running around with guns that are responsible to nobody. That wasn't part of the original idea. My question is, one starts to ask, why am I paying property taxes of $14,000 a year if I can't get police protection? End of story. Thank you for letting me speak.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate that. Ma'am.
Mr. Mayor, I don't need to speak. Mr. Leonetti said it clearly.
So, ditto. Thank you very much. Carla?
Next three are Janet Hammer, Anthony Handy, and Lori Abraham.
Thank you for your patience. You've seen a lot of democracy happen today. And
I'll be brief.
And we're glad you're still here. Another name?
Bob, I believe it's Bob Wheel on Park, Southwest Park. How about Maureen Binder?
All right, please begin, ma'am.
Okay, my name is Janet Hammer. I live on the right side of the tracks in the on the South Park blocks, which I'm glad. And I'm here with a group, and we are all in support of everything that, where's my group, that Skip Frank said, and we are all for the expansion. Thank you.
Thank you. Very succinct. I appreciate that.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. I'm Lori Abraham with the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, and I am here on behalf of Mike Strunk, the District Attorney, to tell you what a vital partner the Clean and Safe has been to our office. You really heard all about that earlier, but I will tell you this. Livability crimes have been the bulk of what the legal assistant that is paid for by the Clean and Safe District provides for our office. We would probably not be able to do that. We do between 200 and 300 each month. And those are brought to us in many cases by the bicycle officers that are also provided by the Clean and Safe District. I do believe that after doing those kind of cases now for 15 years, that the decline in criminal activity that Chief Reese spoke about is partly a result of paying attention to those order maintenance and livability crimes. So we appreciate that partnership and how it provides that person to help me do those crimes. So thank you very much.
Thanks, and thanks for your service. Ms. Binder.
I've lost my voice already. I'm Doreen Binder, Executive Director of Transition Projects. And I actually, it's been interesting to sit here and listen to everybody talk and mention the homeless as often as they have, because, of course, our organization works with the homeless. And I appreciate what I have heard from people, that they're, you know, that they're aware of what's going on, and I've heard a lot of support. Clean and Safe has been an incredible organization that's helped us. The Portland Business Alliance has been supportive of our organization since the beginning, and I support the work that they do. I think they do incredible work. We're working with them to expand what they will do for us as we move to the Bud Clark Commons, which they will play an integral part on what we do. We call them when we need them. What we have found is that by them being in the environment of where we are, we have many fewer incidents than we've ever had before. They support the work we do. They're very friendly with the people on the street, and the people on the street are able to go to them when they need help. They direct them to us. They're an incredible organization that does a lot of work for us. And because I'm moving on, because I have to go get my grandson, I'm going to like to skip to the next issue that you're going to be discussing, because I can't wait another hour.
What do you think about the next issue we're going to be discussing?
What I think about, thank you for asking me. What I think about the next issue, when I came to Portland 16 years ago, there was a drug-free zone in Portland. And interestingly enough, Lori is sitting next to me because we've had more arguments about this than I've ever had with anybody in my life. And I think the new incarnation is an incredible compromise. I think it's a great way to do things. One of the things that Lori and I have discussed over the years is creating a drug-free zone without any meat to anything really doesn't work. You know, you push people from one part of the city to the other. I think that by creating two new walking beat officers is wonderful. To put another DA, assistant DA on this is an incredible insight. I understand the issue that a lot of my staff has talked about with the racial issues and how do we deal with that. I think it's the same way that I have when I worked in domestic violence years ago and still look at the issue of prostitution. We talk about supply and demand. I'd like to look at the issue. I support the process and the new proposal that you have. I also would like to look at the issue of both, again, supply and demand. It's not just arresting people who are selling, but looking at the people who are buying, because you have a discrepancy in race there. And so I would like to propose that we look at that issue, and I appreciate the fact that you're putting me on your new committee, and I'd like to discuss it then. But I support both PBA and the new proposal that you have on that.
Ms. Bender,
thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you all. All right.
Thank you.
Is that it? All right. Terry, Thomas, do we have a... There might be some questions from council, and we need to
clarify. I have a couple of questions, if I could.
Clarify the title. Do you have a clarification for the title?
Yes, we do, Mayor. Go ahead.
How should it read?
It should read, continue the downtown business district property management license fee for an additional 10 years and direct the Revenue Bureau to analyze expansion options and possible changes to fee calculations.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. Carly, can you please call the vote mm-hmm. on the motion?
Fish.
Aye.
Leonard.
Aye.
Fritz.
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. Commissioner Fish.
2 points. One is, I think we've had a graphic illustration today of what happens when we have compound issues within a title. And what you have is mass confusion, including confusion, frankly, up on this dais. And I would strongly urge that we break each issue into a separate resolution just for clarity's sake. And that also, I think, will, in some instances, that will also make the testimony run more smoothly. It may turn out that there was no one actually here to oppose one matter, but maybe on another one. So anyway, we are continually striving as a council to have clearer titles. Every bureau is going through the same process, so just we appreciate that. The second is, I want to address the question that former Commissioner Kafouri raised, who I think used to sit in this seat. Was it this seat? Okay. It's a hot seat here, and it's still warm from her days. And that is the question of equity. Now, if we vote to extend the bid for 10 years, is there a independent mechanism for us to address that her issues during the course of that period, or what would you propose if anyone on the council felt that an issue she raised was worthy of further consideration? How might we do that and also address the issue you have before us today?
The administration of the BID is actually encapsulated in Portland City Code, so at any moment we could change that code if we needed to.
Okay. So if we vote to extend today, it does not preclude us revisiting any issues that was raised, including by former Commissioner Kafouri, as to the fee structure and the equity of that fee structure.
That is correct. And you're not actually voting to extend today. You're directing us to bring forward the ordinance that would enable that extension.
Okay. Thank you for that clarification. I thought we were...
The language, Thomas, says...
Terry Williams, License and Tax Division Manager. Part of the thing is we have to have this hearing so that we know whether we can go forward with any changes and the renewal contract and everything like that. So the whole purpose is identifying council's intention to renew the district.
But it also says, by prior to October 1st, 2011, that we'll return to council in terms of answering Commissioner Fish's question with the analysis having been completed and recommendations and alternatives.
Right. We have two ordinances that will at a minimum come forward with a contract for the next 10 years for the district and changes to that code, some of which may have been identified already. Perhaps some will need longer than that to review. So
the net effect of our vote today, if we vote in the affirmative, is simply to direct you to come back to us at some future time with a resolution, an ordinance that addresses both questions, both the renewal and the question of the expansion?
Well, actually, there are three issues, if I could.
Go ahead. Mm-hmm.
And I'm just taking it from the ordinance. So if I miss the resolution, if I'm misreading it, then correct me. And if The words are imprecise, so we need to change that. But the first, therefore, resolve says, will be renewed for 10 years starting October 1st, 2011. Do you mean to say that, or do you mean to say considered for renewal?
Will be renewed, I think, is the intent. So the district will be renewed. That's
how,
the intent.
Okay. And then separate from that is the issue of expansion. And then there are two fee calculations that are raised in the second, be it further resolved. One is a cap for cultural institutions, and the other is a potential change on the fee formula for condos. Is that correct?
Yes.
That's the legislative intent.
Just explain why we're not putting it out for bid in case anybody else wanted to provide the services.
The city code says that the contractor that's selected for this must be comprised of the board, and the composition of the contractor must be comprised of members of the district.
So the district has selectively.
The district itself, yes.
And if I could just, again, very specifically request that prior to the next time we revisit this, could I get your thoughts on both the notice question that was raised by folks who are renters and who believe that their building was somehow bypassed? I'd like to know if that's a systemic glitch or an individual problem, and any suggestions you might have in that regard. And I would like a specific set of responses to the questions that Mr. Grebe and former Commissioner Kefouri have raised on the question of assessments and equity.
We can do that.
Thank you.
And Mr. Leonetti as well.
We can do that.
And I assume there'll be some sort of advisory group.
We don't actually have a process yet, so I think that's something we need to look at clearly. I mean, in terms of the outreach, before I was with the Revenue Bureau, I spent 7 years at the Office of Neighborhood Involvement in different capacities, so believe me when I tell you that we have no interest in necking down outreach. That said, what the code states right now about outreach is that the property management companies and the property owners are the people that are responsible to be notified. And from there, I think there's a void and there's an assumption that further outreach to renters, et cetera, would happen. Clearly, that didn't happen. And so that might be an opportunity for improvement.
We also had the offer from Commissioner Kefouri that she would be willing to be involved in that. And I think maybe there's an opportunity for a broader discussion rather than just what the code says.
Fair enough.
All right, so expectations are that you'll have a group of citizens that will provide you some expertise, and they'll represent the various views, of which there are many, and lots of passion, and that we will seek to do outreach not just with the code. There's nothing that prevents you from seeking to do outreach to other stakeholders, especially renters.
That's correct.
Okay. Any other discussion from council? Carla, would you please call the vote on the resolution?
I want to thank everybody for their thoughtful testimony and apologize for the scheduling glitches we've had today. It was an unusually crowded calendar, and we do strive as a council to be respectful of people's time. But that said, we appreciate people who took the time to come and share their views. And the issues that you've raised about quality of life and about what's going on in the streets, I wish everybody here shares the concern you've raised about addressing these issues. I know it doesn't feel like much solace, but after having traveled to see other cities, we have done better than many cities our size or larger cities in terms of dealing with the effects of the worst economic recession of my lifetime. Well, sir, you can shake your head, but there are 50,000 unsheltered people in Los Angeles, 50,000, and there are 1,500 here. And I'm not saying we are special. I am simply saying that we have done better than a lot of other jurisdictions. And we do not control the feeders, and we do not control the breakdown of the systems which are causing an inordinate amount of the supply problems on our streets. But we do have some very thoughtful policies in place to address this problem. And what you have said today is we still need to do a better job, and we accept that criticism. Aye.
Leonard?
Well, as I mentioned earlier with the example of the city council person from San Diego touring our public restrooms here, I am not only impressed with the work of Clean and Safe, I'm very proud of the work Clean and Safe did. And she left making notes about the approach that we take to staff certain positions in Clean and Safe, which are people in recovery, which is, for San Diego, as Commissioner Fish pointed out, is actually exponentially more of an issue there than it is here. And I learned in some of those discussions they don't have an organization like Central City Concern. But that we didn't talk a lot about the support function that Central City Concern plays with Clean and Safe, but that's an integral part, of, in my view, not just the work that that Clean and Safe does, but an integral part of interestingly, why Central City Concern is so successful in the model that they use of getting people into recovery, finding housing, jobs, and all that. To the issue of public restrooms, much as Commissioner Fish spoke to the initiatives in the city with respect to the homeless, it has been my interest to make sure there are more public restrooms, particularly in areas congregated by people who don't have other places to go. I heard loud and clear the testimony. I want to follow up, and if the neighbors want to send me emails with specific recommendations for locations of those restrooms, you can rest assured we will follow up quickly and get those installed as quickly as possible. Of course, they are cleaned by Clean and Safe twice a day, 7 days a week, and they do it, as I said earlier, a great job. And so I appreciate the work of Clean and Safe, the testimony that we heard here today, and I look forward to continuing our partnership. Aye.
Fritz.
This is one piece of the puzzle of trying to make downtown Portland the wonderful, vibrant, livable place it is and to make it even safer. And I appreciate the partnership with Clean and Safe and with the Portland Business Alliance. We have a 13-point comprehensive sidewalk management plan, which Shane and others in the room here participate in. Ibrahim Mubarak and Wade is here, and Laurie Abraham. It's a diverse group that meets on Mondays, the first Mondays at from 3:30 to 5 in the Portland building. You can email Sarah Hussein and my staff if you're interested in participating, where we get together every month and talk about how we can do better at sharing the sidewalks downtown. And it does include things like the loos and the other services that are provided. And that's the Portland way. That's the Portland way to get together and talk about things and to include everyone. So I think there was some confusion. I certainly appreciate everyone who emailed me ahead of time to highlight the concerns with this, and that I appreciate the mayor's staff being able to figure some of the issues out ahead of time. And then there's always a good public hearing, and we've certainly had a very good airing of the differences and the challenges. And I think we're, with the good staff that we have, set to move forward to figure out this puzzle even better. And so I greatly appreciate everybody being here today, staying, and for all of your participation. Aye.
Adams.
Well, I think the impetus behind forming Clean and Safe in the first place is as true now as ever, the impending cuts in federal services and required cuts in state services unfortunately means that we will likely have more street issues and the need for more services. And this city council shows a one-time budget surplus for the moment because we cut early and deeper than previous city councils, and we have devoted those resources to a variety of things, including both public safety, drug treatment, and also affordable housing. And for those of you that saw a little bit of Commissioner Fish's report, you saw that we're trying to do it in a way that is not a one-time, even though it's one-time money, but will have sort of permanent benefit. But we need Clean and Safe, and because those federal and state cuts and our own limited resources, they're tough, and it shows up on our streets. And having talked to and spent time with other mayors around the country, this is true for the biggest cities in the states that are everyone is feeling cuts. And it is much worse in some cities, but that's no excuse for us to not continually try to do everything we can and to continuously improve. And we are all, I think, committed to that. So thank you very much to all involved, and we move forward. Aye. So approved. Let's do the second readings really fast. So if you could please read the title and call the vote for 385.
Vacate a portion of Southeast 94th Avenue of Southeast 94th Avenue, north of Southeast Henry Street, subject to certain conditions and reservations. Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams.
Aye. 385 is approved. Can you please read the title for 384? And I'm going to be referring it back to my office.
384, allow consumption of alcohol in the public right-of-way, provided a permit for a community event street closure, alcohol allowed, is issued under Chapter 17.44.
Unless there are objections, referred back to the mayor's office. Can you please read the title and call the vote for 386?
Amend city code to reflect current structure, operations, and new responsibilities in the Office of Management and Finance. Fish?
Aye.
Leonard?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Adams?
Aye. Item is approved. Can you please read the title for resolution item number 383?
Support the addition of a deputy district attorney and reestablishment of the Walking Beat program for arrest and prosecution of drug crimes in illegal drug impact areas.
If staff would please come forward, who's going to be speaking to this issue. There are cycles, waves within every part of the city. Some are positive, some are challenging. This seeks to deal with a challenging end of the cycle as it relates to drug dealing in hotspots within the city. I have been with this issue on and off for many years and have seen the various efforts that we've attempted. But I'm pleased to bring this forward, given prior work that the council has done, led by Commissioner Leonard, to address more than ever the need for human support, drug treatment, mental health treatment. And I'm pleased to bring this forward because it is based on conviction, and prior efforts were based on a mere trespass. This before us is about a limited piece of the overall effort to add a district attorney and to provide resources for a Walking Beat program in Old Town, or however far we can stretch it, and the need exists. So it's a resolution, and once it's passed, we can go forward and complete our partnership agreements with the county. Amrit, who's giving the presentation? Oh, yeah, please come up.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Kuykendall. I'm the Director of Services for the Portland Police Bureau in the Chief's Office. I'm also a downtown resident, and I'm happy to come in here today and answer some questions about the proliferation of drug dealing in the city. A few months ago, the Old Town Chinatown Neighborhood Association came forward and said that they were being bombarded with drug crime, and that something needed to happen to make their streets and sidewalks safer again. So the first thing that I did was went and pulled the 2010 statistics for drug crime in the city, just to see if what was being reported by the media and by the residents and businesses in Old Town was accurate. And as you can see from the map above, this details all of the drug dealing and drug possession crimes in Portland, about 2,800 of them last year. And as you can see very clearly, Old Town, Chinatown, and downtown has been the primary beneficiary or recipient of drug crime. It's an awful situation that they are currently dealing with down there. I met with the mayor. The mayor asked the chief to organize a drug mission in downtown Old Town to see if we could alleviate some of the issue. Actually, on one of the nights of our drug mission, the mayor actually went out and spent an evening with some staff, just observing how the mission was conducted, and would be prepared today to I'm sure, offer testimony about the huge amounts of drug dealing that are going on. We actually last week went to grand jury with 32 different cases of drug dealing, drug possession, weapons charges out of this mission that was done last month. So it's a huge problem. As you can see, there are some other areas of town where there's an increased amount of drug dealing and drug possession, but right now it looks like downtown is in Old Town is really the primary focus for that particular crime. So the mayor asked if I would work with his staff and come up with a potential solution to this. What the Old Town Chinatown folks had asked for was a reinstitution of the drug-free zone, which nobody in the police bureau or the mayor's office thought was appropriate under the circumstances. So I kind of put on my thinking cap. I met with the district attorney's office with some police officers and came up with a plan that is kind of back to the future, actually. Back when I was a young deputy DA in the 1980s, we had a program called High Vice Restrictions, and those lines were drawn by the district attorney's office and our planning and support division based upon statistics of drugs and prostitution in the city. And then what would happen would be the DA, whenever they had a crime of prostitution or drug dealing in those areas, go to court. When there was a conviction, they would ask the judge to impose as a condition of probation that would be supervised by a judge this high vice restriction. And what that meant that is if someone went into the area that didn't live or do business there or receive treatment there, that they could be arrested for a probation violation. The problem with that, the high vice restriction, is that back in the late 80s and the early 90s, police officers did not have the authority to arrest for probation violations. Only the probation officer could. So what would have to happen is the police would see somebody violating the high vice restriction. They were in this area where they were precluded. The police would have to write a report. The police would have to go down to the judge the next judicial day, hand the report over, and then wait for the judge or the judge's staff to make a decision about whether a warrant would go out. And that proved to be too cumbersome, one for the officers, two for the judges and their staff. So we really weren't very successful at getting people that went back into these high-vice areas taken into custody for violating their probation. So that was the beginning of why we came up with the drug-free zone concept. That started back in the early 90s, where people would be excluded based upon probable cause arrests for drug dealing, drug possession. And after 90 days, if they were convicted, they would get a one-year exclusion from the judge by operation of city ordinance. And in 2007, the drug-free zones went away. And so since that time, we haven't been able to really deal with this problem other than with massive amounts of overtime and the walking beat patrols that we've done down in Old Town the last 3 or 4 years. And interesting has happened since the end of the high vice restrictions is that in 2001, police officers were given the authority to arrest for probation violations. So if there's a police officer that sees someone that they know is violating probation, for whatever condition the judge put on as a condition of probation, the police can arrest, put a detainer on, and take that person to custody. The judge would then hear the case the next judicial day. So that's an interesting little piece that we didn't have, a tool that we didn't have back in the late 80s and early 90s, and that's where we're going back to is that we hope to go back to is where there are convictions for drug crime in these high-intensity drug impact areas that are set by the DA's office and our support and strategic support service division at the police bureau. Those people will be excluded if they're convicted by a judge. The judge would supervise the probation. The judge would put conditions of probation on, which would include drug treatment and other things associated with drug crime, but also would tell them if you don't live or have or work or receive treatment in these areas, you're not to be back in there. And by way of reference, let me give you an example of how this is done every single day in the courthouse. The judges issue stay-away orders, which is what this is, against pedophiles. If someone is convicted of a child abuse crime and put on probation, the judge will say one condition typically is you can't be within 1,000 feet of a school. That's good for the children at that school because it keeps pedophiles away. That's good for the pedophile because they have less opportunity to reoffend. Same thing happens with gang cases. If a gangster is convicted, and a judge typically will say you're not to associate with known gang members. And the reason for that is it's good for the community to not have known gang members clustering and shooting at each other and committing crime. It's also good for the gangster who's now on probation and hopefully rehabilitating himself. So it's not an unheard of concept. It happens every day in the courthouse where judges issue stay away orders for the benefit of the community as well as the offender. The big difference here, in addition to having court-ordered supervision versus probable cause police arrest, where we have formal convictions, we have individuals that actually receive counsel. Everybody that comes through this program that's convicted of a crime, misdemeanor or felony, will have a lawyer assigned to them, which was never done under the former drug-free zone program. The big piece is that people in this group that are identified as drug addicts that need drug treatment will now be wired into the service coordination team, which the city spends about $2 million a year on. We have empty beds in that program right now that we're putting burglars and car thieves into as part of our burglary task force. We still have empty beds. And so people that are in these drug impact areas committing drug crimes, put on probation, given stay away orders, will also have an opportunity for treatment for the very first time as part of this program. So I personally think it's the right answer. I think it goes back to what, to harken back to Eric Stinn and Commissioner Leonard's comments to me many times during the drug-free zone eras, is if they're conviction-based, we support them. As long as there's a judge supervising and the conditions are reasonable and it's moderated and watched by the courts, we're good to go. And so that's what we tried to bring you here.
And we're offering treatment.
So I'd like to first of all say that District Attorney Schrunk was actually here this morning to offer his support and willingness to participate in this project. He was also here again this afternoon, but unfortunately had to leave. He's got the head of his drug unit here, Mark McDonald, and the head of the community prosecution program, Wayne Pearson, here if you have any questions. But the DA is 100% behind this. We actually, the city pays for a couple of DAs for other programs, our prostitution program out on 82nd and our service coordination team downtown. So this isn't an unheard of partnership. So we've got support there. I also have asked a couple of other folks to come up and testify in support. The first is Floyd Pittman. I want to introduce you to Floyd. Floyd graduated from the services coordination team last year. He's been clean and sober for 2 years in June. He's currently a student at Portland Community College, and he's actually on the dean's list this semester. So Floyd has a rather compelling story.
You can clap.
And that I asked him.
You don't mind being on.
that's right. You like that list? So I thought it might be helpful for Floyd, having gone to treatment down in Old Town Chinatown and downtown, to talk about that and what the effect of drug dealers and drug crime had on him and other individuals who are trying to be in recovery. So Floyd?
For the record, yeah, my name is Floyd Pittman. First of all, I'm very grateful for the program, service coordination team, and it's changed my life completely. I do have a life today. I just got off parole in January after 29 years and recovery. I've been clean for almost 2 years in June. June 14th, I have 2 years. But it's been something. I've been downtown over 15, 20 years by choice, and it's always been like a candy store for drugs for me, being that I didn't need money. I didn't need anything just to be there and do the transactions. I've been arrested over 100 times. I have over 37 felonies, and my life has totally changed. I haven't broken the law in almost 2 years. And it's amazing that I can still go down there and still see the same people doing the same thing, because the addiction is so strong that if there is no deterrent, why change? The fact is that it was more than a candy store. It was more like just a continual getting of all the dope you wanted on a daily basis. Breaking the law, breaking in cars, stealing the stores, all that just came along with it. I know for me, I just became so numb and so insane that whatever I needed to do to get it at the time, if a dealer pulled up or came on the block, I would do whatever I had to do to get it because the dope showed up. And they seemed to be able to walk around freely the whole time while a lot of us who are using go to jail. And I used to trip off that a little bit, I admit, but it would just spark my interest to go do what I had to do to get more dope. If it's there, I got to have it, and nothing's going to stop it until I get arrested, which happened quite a few times. And it's just something that I saw all those spots up there on that thing about drug usage. I think there's so many spots that have not even been touched yet, but that's just my opinion on that. I'm just grateful for the service team that has touched my life and the opportunity you've given me to have a life. I lost my mom, and I'm really just so grateful today that I feel closer to her than I ever have right now. And my family's in my life, and just, you know, I never thought that treatment would make a difference. I've been to treatment over 20 times, and none of the treatment centers that I went to made a difference at all.
What was the difference in this experience?
Well, I think it, for me, it was just the availability of counselors on a 24-hour basis. It's a smaller treatment center. You have access. So whenever I had it, for me, when I came out of prison, I was pretty much, I had two holes in my heart, and I was kind of on a suicidal mission, really. I was just going to just do drugs until I died. And what I have found that when I got there, the hurt of me losing my mom and not being there yet again for the I don't know how many times, and Denise Boylan she told me I was worth it. And I wasn't really ready for that. It was a big thing, and I ended up going to treatment. But during that time at treatment, I was able to finally visit my mother's grave. It took me over 3 years to get there. And I remember the night that my sister had called me and told me that it was our mom's anniversary. And it was something that I never wanted to hear about because I was running from it. And that was really the big thing for me to be able to go back and to deal with that and to look at that and say goodbye to her. And that was because it was like 2:30 in the morning. I was able to go talk to one of the counselors and sit down and talk, and he allowed me to write a letter to her that night, and it made a big difference for me.
Well, you, sir, are an amazing inspiration, and congratulations on your success thus far, and keep going.
And it's great to see you sitting on the same side of the table as the police chief.
Yeah.
Sitting over here being interviewed.
No change either. No change.
Exactly.
Floyd and I testified at Salem recently on our drug forfeiture, the state law allowing drug forfeitures to go towards treatment.
Excellent.
And you were also at the Downtown Neighborhood Association giving back again, sharing your story, which is really helpful for people to hear. So thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am.
Chief Weiss, would you like to add anything?
Just briefly, Mayor and Council, thank you. Again, one of the most powerful things that came out of our service coordination team graduation recently, the graduates get up and make a brief statement about their transformation in their life. And Denise Boylan, as Floyd said, is a parole probation officer who's been very important. But one of the graduates got up and said, I want to thank the Portland Police Bureau for making it really hard to buy crack cocaine. What we try and do with innovative strategies that we're talking about today is take away the environment that allows crime to occur and get at the low-hanging fruit so that we don't have to spend a lot of resources and time and effort spinning our wheels making drug arrests that just cycle people through the system. As the mayor saw firsthand when he went out with our team of officers that was working this drug reduction mission, it's a labor intensive. It takes a lot of resources to be effective. There's a lot of issues as you go through the criminal justice system to get to a conviction. So when we get to that point where people are being convicted of drug crimes, if we can keep them out of that area that allows that behavior to occur, and obviously in downtown and other parts of our city, we have historic issues. And if we can take away that environment that allows that crime to occur, it makes it much more difficult for the drug addicts to get their crack cocaine or heroin or methamphetamine. It makes it much easier then for the officers. They know that that person's been convicted. They know a judge has issued a stay-away order, and they can keep that person out of it, and there's immediate consequences to their action. So they're out. We take them out of the area. It doesn't mean incarcerating people for long periods of time. In fact, just getting them out of there for a few hours interdicts that behavior. If they have drugs on them again that they're coming down there to sell, we can make an arrest and hold them accountable.
And the parole officer is involved.
Yeah.
And there's a whole team of folks. And there is, again, these services, which did not exist under the drug-free zone.
Exactly.
Correct.
Yep. I may not be here for the vote, and I apologize, but I want to just make sure I understand a couple of components. In terms of the part of the resolution that requires special terms of probation, is that something that we can require, we can do by changing laws? Is it something that requires a state law change? Is it
agreement.
An agreement? Does it require, first of all, it requires the agreement of whom to accomplish that?
It would require the agreement of the judge who has heard the case, whether it's been a plea or a trial.
Okay.
So what the goal would be that the district attorney for all cases involving the type of drugs that are dealt with here in our high vice areas, which are meth, crack, and heroin, they will ask for stay away orders from those locations.
And so that it's still subject to the discretion of the judge as to whether to impose this.
Ultimately, it would be the bench. It's court ordered supervision. If the judge thinks it's a good idea that this person, again, should not be in an area where there's lots of drugs.
The point I want to get at is there's then two levels here of protection for the person against whom this order may be imposed. The first is there must be a conviction.
Correct.
And the second is as a condition of probation, there must be a judicially determined order that incorporates this stay away order.
That's correct.
So both levels of protection.
Right. And actually, there's a third layer, which is all of these people are entitled to counsel, right, who would work with them and determine whether this is a good thing to have happen to them.
They'd be advised by an attorney
whether to accept that offer from the district attorney's office for probation with the stay away order.
Mike, without going into this too deep, we have in the law, there's lots of occasions where there are restrictions placed on someone's behavior as a condition of either, in some cases, an arrest based on a certain level of finding or on a conviction. I'm thinking about, for example, restraining orders that are issued in cases of domestic abuse, alleged. And that's alleged domestic abuse. You can get a restraining order even if you haven't been convicted, correct?
Right, correct. Mm-hmm.
And there are other types of restrictions that the law permits, correct?
Correct.
But they all require a judge to determine that there's a sufficient legal basis to issue that.
Correct.
That order. And they are all subject, presumably, to some kind of appeal.
That's correct.
If you disagree with it.
And, of course, the standard for a judge is beyond a reasonable doubt in a criminal case, whereas the standard under the former zone was probable cause from a police officer. So the standard is much higher as well.
Okay, thank you very much.
So just to clarify, we are not adopting any exclusion zones like we did for parks or like we did for the gun zones. We're not adopting a map or anything.
No.
So we won't be asked to?
No. The ask today is for money for the deputy district attorney who will handle this program and $120,000 for the Walking Beat, the very successful Walking Beat program, which, again, it's not just Old Town Chinatown. That's where I think the program will start. But as you can see from the map, there are other areas of the city that could benefit from this type of probation conditions as well.
But if I could also answer a piece of that question, and that is the district attorney, using the data, will decide the boundaries of the
correct
hotspots.
Could I just ask one other question? I'm sorry. We've discussed briefly the legal and particularly the constitutional basis for this action. And on the practical side, to what extent does this result in simply a displacement to an adjacent neighborhood? And what data do we have on that we're not shifting a problem from one place to another?
I can answer that.
If I could take it first, the displacement, because a key part of this is the opportunity for treatment. So the idea is there will likely be some displacement, but because this is post-conviction, and the goal here is to actually, as the chief said, deal with the underlying issues that causes a lot of this drug dealing and crime, is our hope is that the displacement will be much less than when it was simply a trespass based on an arrest. And there's a lot of revolving doors with a lot of people with trespasses that were passing through. So in addition to making this stick, because the courts and a whole team are involved and treatment's involved, my hope is that displacement will occur, will follow it, but it will be less.
So if I could take a stab at this, and to the extent that I get this wrong, I was schooled by then Officer Jeff Myers, now Detective Jeff Myers, but I think the better description of this program, at least from my perspective, that we're taking action on here today, is to plug back in a hole that was created when the district attorney quit funding a position that was part of the early successes of the service coordination team. So, in other words, I have never, since I've been on the city council, voted for a drug-free zone. And originally, I was the only person, including Commissioner Stan, I might add, that voted against drug-free zones. Because I felt then, I felt now, it just displaces the problem to another neighborhood. When Mike Reese was commander of Central Precinct, he oversaw the creation with Officer Myers of this service coordination team. So as I understand the process, it works like this with our renewed funding of this gap that had been created. When a person is arrested for buying drugs, they now, as opposed to getting a citation, which they used to get back before we started this program, will go to jail because we, the city, funded jail beds. I'm not sure that we need to do that anymore as part of the program, but when we first started this program, we had to fund jail beds to the tune of $1.3 million to open up a unit of 57 beds, thus the name Project 57. So we had to give officers a tool other than a ticket to give somebody so that they could land in jail. But if you just put somebody in jail, you don't actually get to the root of the fundamental issue that they were dealing with. So we discovered we needed to come up with another $500,000 to fund treatment programs. So we went to the county and we augmented the budget that they could not afford to create treatment beds for a variety of different levels of offenders, all the way from people post-prison release to, you know, first-time offenders. But we created drug treatment. But in order to get them into drug treatment, we had to take the people that were arrested and get them in front of a judge and have some conditions of parole put on them. And one of the conditions included, you will know, and these are judicial decisions, not legislative decisions that we make or administrative decisions that the police bureau makes, but clearly judicial decisions. You, you know, Floyd, in between Burnside and Flanders and Front Avenue and Broadway, we better not see you. If we see you, you're in violation of your parole. And I bet you've heard something like that before. You're in violation of parole, and you get to go back down to the 10th floor of the Justice Center. And that happened over and over and over. So they go back to the 10th floor of the Justice Center, then somebody like Jeff or somebody else would go in and say, you didn't hear the message. The message is you get to stay in jail or go into a treatment bed, and until you make a decision to do one or the other, this is the revolving door you now find yourself in this new, brand new approach that we're taking to treating people who are drug addicts and getting arrested or selling drugs. As I understand it, what we are now doing is refunding that original approach of empowering police officers to put people in a jail bed, continuing to fund the treatment beds to give people the options that are in jail to decide whether they want to stay in jail or go to a treatment bed. And if they think they're going to gain the system and walk out of the treatment bed and then head right back down to Third and Cooch, part of their post-conviction conditions of parole are they aren't supposed to be there, so they go back to jail. And thus, we find success when people ultimately realize this is a very well thought out, serious approach to drug dealing and drug purchasing and drug use in Old Town.
It certainly drove down crime in downtown by about 35%, the original program with Jeff Myers. So we would hope to replicate those kind of successes. And even more important is the human capital, the lives that we can save by getting them clean and sober.
But to the extent we don't have a bed to put someone in through the program, there is, I think, just my question about is there a possibility of displacement was meant to be sort of a rhetorical question. The answer, as I understand, is yes, there may be some displacement, but we don't want the concentration in this area. And
historically, these areas have decades of we've experienced decades of this being the center of the drug culture in downtown Portland. And certainly, I think Ed Blackburn from Central City Concern was speaking about it last week, in that you know, this isn't a 5-year trend or a 7-year or 10-year. This is decades of drug issues in the Old Town area.
So, but the issue of displacement, I think, needs a very direct response. Because if what we were doing was displacing, I would revert back to my prior opposition of this kind of approach. But the fact is, I think the Bureau had run numbers on people who committed offenses. Mm-hmm. And I think the list was something like 350 long. So you had a person who was who actually had a name, who was a person that could have committed the most offenses, mm-hmm. that was continuing to offend while addicted to drugs, down to those that had the least amount of offenses on this list. But as they started identifying those folks in Old Town and beginning this process, what we found was that people, once they successfully completed the program, mirrored Floyd's experiences and quit offending. So the more prominent offenders dropped out of the system, which created beds for people who weren't as high up originally, but then all of a sudden were at the top of the list.